Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's worth remembering that tsunami is a Japanese word.
Absolutely.
It's written with two characters. It means harbor wave. By one story, the origin is from ancient Japanese fishermen who came home to find their docks and homes destroyed, even though there was no noticeable wave when they were out at sea. It's a terrifying thought.
Yeah, to come back and, you know, without thinking anything right. has occurred, to find it all gone.
You'd need a word for that, to be sure. Well, a tsunami is, of course, only one of the natural terrors woven into Japanese culture. The great Kanto earthquake of 1923 killed as many as 142,000, including more than 40,000 people who simply vanished. And Japan's modern history contains some man-made horrors as well. The firebombing of World War II, and of course the twin nuclear attacks on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. You're listening to the soundtrack of the movie Godzilla. Godzilla, of course, it's a monster movie, but it's actually much more than that. It's a transparent metaphor of all that can befall Japan. If you look at the movie, there's shots of buses flying around, of giant waves of water, as well as earthquake-looking shaking of buildings and destruction. Popular and high culture in Japan are filled with images of catastrophe, followed by rebuilding and bitter stories of hard lessons learned. And helping us to navigate the very profound narrative that goes back a long way in Japan is Dr. Tom Loser. He's Associate Professor of Japanese Studies at NYU and is right here in the studio with us. Professor, good morning.
Good morning.
I mean, where do you start looking for those threads of narrative that tell the story of how the Japanese hold out against all odds, then triumph, and then learn hard lessons in a very emotional way?
I suppose at a practical level, if you really wanted to look back, you could look at the fact that Japanese cities were built typically with wooden houses that were made also with paper that burnt very easily. And so there was this cyclicity almost of disaster in the sense that entire city areas would burn down periodically. And you could still find in Tokyo today people on winter's evening at least who would be going around each night at about 10 o'clock hitting pieces of wood saying Hino Yojin, which means be careful of fire. There is that sense that there is a potential disaster still there. But I think much more importantly are much bigger events in the post-war period, the World War II in particular.
Well, when Naoto Kan, the Japanese prime minister, evoked World War II, saying this is the worst crisis in 65 years.
Sure.
So, I mean, everyone in Japan knows exactly what he's talking about.
Sure. And there is a sense that the post-war period is a period now, and it has sort of a beginning and an ending. And there's been discussion that there is an ending to that as well.
I referred to the Godzilla movie here a moment ago. Describe that as a literary metaphor that goes way beyond simply a monster movie. And where how present is that for people of Japan?
First of all, it was a very important movie. It was not a B-movie in the way some of us tend to think of it as. It was twice the budget of any other film at that time. It was nominated for the Japan Academy Awards at the time. And it's really about modernity itself, I think, and the failures of modernity in some ways.
And do you think in the coping with this disaster, the Japanese are, known to be so prepared and, are in many ways the supreme sort of agents of modernity? Their nation has one of the most robust infrastructures in the world, are ultimately disappointed by the capacity of modernity to protect them?
Well, certainly Godzilla itself was a critique of modernity, the sense that science itself had led to the nuclear disaster as just itself one metaphor for modernity, in other words. And in that sense, if you look at the end of the movie, it's quite tragic. A scientist has to kill himself and everything he's brought with him. And so it's a sense that you can't go back anymore, and yet what you've got now is a tragic trajectory, at least.
I want to turn to one other sort of artistic artifact here, and it's more than an artifact. Some have described it as the most significant anti-war movie that's ever been made, Hotaru no Haka. It's
sure.
Translated Grave of the Fireflies. It was actually produced in 1988, an animated war film about the aftermath of World War II, written and directed by Isao Takahata.
Look. It's all gone. That was the civic hall. We ate lunch there once.
Seto, is our house gone too?
Probably.
What do we do?
Dad'll make him pay for this.
It's the English version there of Grave of the Fireflies. And they're looking at a landscape burned out by the firebombing of Tokyo. But what do you make of that movie in terms of its emotional intensity?
Well, it starts out quite bleak at the very outset, and it really doesn't change from that very much. I mean, these are orphans who've been orphaned by the war and by the immediate post-war situation, and they die. That's not a happy world.
Yeah, but let me ask you about the ways in which Japanese reaction to catastrophe is depicted in art. Because, you know, you're talking about the houses made of sometimes very light wood and paper.
Sure.
And there's so many books that I've seen, Japanese books, in which they refer to that as not only being very flammable and easily destroyed, but also easily rebuilt. That's also
sure.
part of their culture, the fact that you can then put up a new house within hours.
Sure. Well, by the 1980s, you do have the sense, number one, that the post-war period itself has been tremendously successful, and the post-war period is really based on a kind of consumerism. By that point, you start to see in popular culture these images of apocalypse that are really not about apocalypse. They're post-apocalyptic. In other words, a lot of the anime that you see starting in the early 80s even starts out as the opening premise, this disaster of variety of sorts.
Right, the catastrophe happens
right.
at the start.
And so then the question becomes what comes after that. In a certain sense, apocalypse is a good ending, in other words.
It's an embrace, you almost see. I mean, a lot of the anime films that have been so successful worldwide are about global warming, global catastrophes that the entire world faces, not simply the Japanese.
Sure, and it's therefore a very generalized metaphor. It could be about environmental disaster. It could be about the onset of technology and what that does to our notions of humanity. It could be all kinds of things. But the basic point, you're right, is indeed that there is a new world possible here, and maybe that's not a bad thing.
Does this notion of catastrophe in Japan live as a sense of we are a chosen kind of people, almost like the sort of tragedy of Jewish narratives in the world? Or is it more we are the strongest people, we're better able to deal with this, or we are the unlucky people? How does it work?
In all honesty, I'm hesitant to say that there is a sense that it is specifically about the Japanese people as a people. In some ways, that's precisely one of the things that perhaps is increasingly reaching an end, the notion that you could have a national people, in other words. The kind of network notions of identity, for instance, that you see constantly in things like Ghost in the Shell, it's all about the impossibility in some ways of those kinds of identities.
So there is a Japanese identity that is embracing a sort of universal humanistic almost narrative.
It could be humanistic or it could be post-humanistic, sure.
What's post-humanistic mean before we go?
It would mean a kind of identity that doesn't have the stability of boundaries that we would tend to think of as humanism, that would say that I am human or this is what it is to be human in a good versus a bad sense even.
And the Japanese leading the way, sadly, even in the aftermath of this catastrophe.
That's right.
Your thoughts seeing those images?
Well, it's awful. I mean, it's truly remarkable. I saw some of that live, and just it's tremendously potent. But it is clearly that this will add to that sense of an ending, I think.
This is a milestone for the world and for the people of Japan.
Absolutely.
Tom Loser is Associate Professor of Japanese Studies at NYU. We're going to take you out with the theme from Grave of Fireflies, which is a sense visually and in music of the Japanese people having availability, a connection, even to those who've been lost.
Throughout the morning, we are trying to keep you up to date on the latest from Japan, not only the humanitarian crisis and the recovery efforts, search and rescue efforts, certainly, but also the possibility of a nuclear emergency. You can get resources on how to help. We have a list of places and extremely easy to make a donation. That's at thetakeaway.org/blogs. In the meantime, we invite you to join the conversation about what's going on. If you're from Japan, you have relatives are there, maybe you're in Japan right now, or you simply have thoughts about the disaster, give us your story at 8778-MY-TAKE, or you can post your comment at thetakeaway.org. You know, I was surprised on Friday, pleasantly, John, about how many people were reporting to us, our listeners, reporting to us from Japan or who had lived in Japan.
It's a worldwide conversation, and as Tom Loser said, it's available to all of us, this story. 8778-MY-TAKE, you know how to reach us. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway. We'll be right back.